This is the Diehards.
Sale winds. He fires.
Swing and a miss. Strike three. It's over. The Red Sox have won the World Championship.
Tom Brady takes the snap, drops to the knee, and the Patriots have won their sixth Super Bowl title.
The Diehards start now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and Basketball Insider's Bobby Krivitsky.
Welcome back to the Diehards. Hour number two officially kicking off. Bobby Krivitsky alongside Chuk rewrites here on Sports Map Radio, coming to you live from the Pepe compound in Boston, Massachusetts. Shu, you brought it up in the first hour. Let's get down to it right now. The Phoenix Suns have matched the Indiana Pacers' record offer sheet to DeAndre Ayton, 4 years, $133 million. For the longest time, Shu, it did not seem like DeAndre Ayton would be back in a Phoenix Suns uniform.
I mean, it didn't, which is why like the news actually really surprised me when CBS Sports had announced that they were going to amass their offer sheet. But you know what? Good on them. But what this basically means is that they can't trade him until January 15th, and that he cannot get traded or signed with the Indiana Pacers for another year. So I think it's a good move because he's still got a pretty darn good team in Phoenix with Devin Booker leading the way. So I thought it would be a really bad move to lose a guy who is practically a unicorn in today's NBA standards in terms of bigs who could score. He averaged 17 points per game. He can grab you 10 rebounds per game as well. But to lose him, I thought it would have been like a big blow in terms of the interior paint presence, and I'm glad they're able to keep him.
Yeah, this was the best team in the league last regular season. They fell apart in the playoffs unexpectedly for a few reasons. You know, they kind of had a COVID spread in the playoffs, and that impacted them, among other things. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, who knows? Maybe they win the Larry O'Brien Trophy last year. And the idea that they would lose one of their big three, and what are you replacing him with, Miles Turner? Or do you not do a sign-and-trade, and now he's just gone for nothing,
exactly.
One of your most valuable assets? So it really felt like this was an obvious decision, but at the same time, Robert Sarver, among other things, has built this reputation for not paying guys, and he already gave out two max deals, Booker and Chris Paul. They've got Mikal Bridges on a nice-sized contract, so it seems like maybe they wouldn't do this, but now they do. They dive deep into the luxury tax, and they've got a legitimate chance as a result for however long Ayton's there to go out and win a championship. Stick with us here. More on the Diehards.
You're listening to the Diehards on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and Basketball Insider's Bobby Krivitsky.
You're listening to the Diehards here on the Sports Map Radio Network. Bobby Krivitsky alongside Chuk rewrites. The home run derby is right around the corner. We've got the home run champ himself, Pete Alonso, coming back to defend his crown. We've got Kyle Schwarber, who's hitting bomb after bomb after bomb. He's the number one seed in this eight-player bracket. We've got Jose Ramirez, Juan Soto, Connor Mack from Pub Sports Radio brought up J-Rod, Julio Rodriguez. But, Shu, we were talking during the break. It's pretty clear who the biggest draw at this year's tournament is.
Easily, it's going to be Albert Pujols. Because, and part of me, I'm a man who just munching on a snack. But Pujols is going to be munching on a snack, and that's going to be baseballs.
Yeah, what?
And what's so crazy is that we were talking about this off the air, and I really want to bring America back with me for a moment. Albert Pujols made his major league debut April of 2001. This was just mere 5 months before 9/11. He made his big league debut. We're about to hit the 21-year anniversary in about a little less than 2 months from now. And he's about to play in his final All-Star game, his final home run derby. There's no question in my mind that is the big story in this year's All-Star game, similar to when Tony Gwynn and Cal Ripken played at that unforgettable All-Star game in 2001 in Seattle, which turned out to be their final All-Star games as well.
Yeah, you're spot on. I mean, this is one of the legends of baseball all time. Obviously, one of the greats from his generation as well. And so the idea that everyone knows this is the swan song, it's a great moment for all of baseball collectively, with all eyes on the same venue, and the best players are all in the same stadium to salute greatness one final time. This is kind of a farewell tour, so he gets to do it stadium to stadium, but this is the MLB world. Fans, especially those in attendance, and those his peers as well, now it's really guys who are younger than him, being able to just tip their cap and shower him in the love that he deserves and earns. Another thing, this is a guy in Albert Pujols, not just a great player, someone who you'd be hard-pressed to find someone with a negative take on him.
Oh, absolutely. You talk about a hitter, in my opinion, there's only two right-handed sluggers in this generation that I strongly believe influence an entire generation of hitters in baseball. Pujols being one of them, and then the other one, Miguel Cabrera himself. And it's going to be pretty neat to have them both at the All-Star game in Los Angeles this in a few days. And we talk about the Home Run Derby, and we're going to get back to that in a moment. But just thinking in terms of the historical significance of all of this, Pujols, we all know, unanimous first battle Hall of Fame. He probably may get in unanimously, but of course you're going to have those one or two baseball writers that's going to say, well, maybe he did something. Like, of course. But he's going to get into the Hall of Fame with his ballot. That's no question. You talk about moments, indelible moments. But what did he do in October? Ooh, let me tell you. 2005, we were talking about this off the air. The legendary home run of Brad Lidge in game five of the National League Championship Series. And then for me, my favorite moment, easily, Game 3, 2011 World Series, in a year in which the Cardinals had absolutely no business making it to postseason, as part of what I think is one of the most magical and unforgettable World Series runs in the last 25 years, Pujols has an offensive performance for the ages. Could he do it again at Dodger Stadium on Monday night? Let's see, but I think he can.
I hope so. It's going to be tough because Pete Alonso is 2-for-2 in this tournament, and as Connor,
he's got to be the overwhelming favorite.
He's got to be the favorite, even though he's not the one seed. He comes into this as the two. He's taken down the likes of Vlad Guerrero Jr. in the past. Otani was in that competition last year, so Pujols is the big draw this year. It was Otani last year, but it's Pete Alonso who keeps emerging with the crown. And he's got the build, he hits bombs, and he's got the stamina. That's what separates everyone. I remember when Bobby Abreu cranked out 24 in one round, and he didn't go on to win it because, understandably, he was exhausted from that performance.
He did. Bobby Abreu won it in 05. Yeah, he did.
I'm going to look that up.
He did. I'm willing to bet money.
I give you the benefit of the doubt.
I'm willing to bet money. That's how confident he did. I remember he had that Masters first round. He hit 24, 17.
Okay.
Yeah,
he did.
Like in the first round, it was just absolutely like unforgettable. But man, you can't talk about Bobby Abreu's performance without talking about Josh Hamilton.
That's
at old Yankee Stadium in the final year in 2008. That one is forever seared in my memory because of sentimental reasons, as for reasons that America you can understand. Final year of old Yankee Stadium. The All-Star game in New York that summer, and that night, and that magical night was something that I had never seen before or since.
Can I tell you something interesting?
What's up?
The MLB, the Home Run Derby, is the same. It's to what Major League Baseball, the slam dunk contest, is to the NBA.
Great point, yeah.
But the slam dunk contest is kind of played out, and it's how can you come up with a new creative dunk? It's like, we've seen it. This year's was maybe the worst in history. People are pretty over it. The Home Run Derby, even for people who right now might not be feeling it, they're going to put it on just to see what's going on. They're going to see clips on social media. And what never really happens with this, they put little wrinkles in, but the event and what you're doing, you're hitting home runs off BP-style pitching, it just keeps pulling people in year after year.
I'd be shocked if there wasn't more buzz than what there already is. And I think that there is legitimate buzz surrounding this year's MLB Home Run Derby. I mean, go look at the pool. This year, you talk about guys that are going to be in it, Pete Alonso, Ronald Acuña Jr., Kyle Schwarber, Pujols, the aforementioned, Corey Seager, Julio Rodriguez, Juan Soto, and Jose Ramirez. That's us. That is an absolute pastrami, beef, and turkey sandwich, three-layer, three-tiered sandwich right there in front of you baseball fans. Like, come on. If that doesn't get you juiced up, I really question how much of a true baseball fan are you, because that's a pretty darn good lineup 1-8 in terms of the home run derby field. And it should be a real magical and an electric performance by all eight of the guys.
I mean, what more do you want? You've got a generational talent in a swan song send-off. You've got a young rising star in Julio Rodriguez. You've got guys who are more established but still on the younger side of things, like in Alonso, a two-time defending champ, Acuña Jr. and Soto. Jose Ramirez, older star as well. Corey Seager, middle of his career. It checks every box with the participants.
Absolutely.
The only one that, if I could put him in here, would be Ohtani. But we got that last year in this field. Again, it's got everything that people could possibly be looking to see.
And that's something that I think in itself is going to be a lot of fun. But what I am most curious to see is this. I've never seen Dodger Stadium host an All-Star Game or Home Run Derby until now. The last time it happened, if memory serves me correctly, I think it was 40-plus years ago.
It's a gorgeous backdrop for this.
I was just in Los Angeles a year ago, and I tell you, like, the backdrop of that stadium and where it's located in L.A. is incredible. But, man, when I tell you, I'm curious to see how that ball is going to carry, especially late in the day in L.A. And late in the day in L.A. before it gets night.
It's got to get through traffic.
It's got to get through traffic, and that traffic is going to be that air. And I'm curious to see how the balls are going to carry in at Dodger Stadium Monday night.
It's going to be interesting to see, and that could certainly factor into the competition. And who's got, again, it's about power and it's about stamina. So you got to cut through the smog out in L.A., mm-hmm. and you've got to be able to do it round after round after round until you're the last one standing. So we'll see who ultimately emerges. And then, Shu, really quickly here, we've got about a minute left. I want to get to the All-Star Game because this is an event where it draws less than the Home Run Derby. People like to tune in at the beginning, and then they're out of there.
Exactly.
And the World Series, home field advantage, not on the line with it anymore. Mm-hmm. So it's just different. It loses that incentive, which I'm not saying right or wrong, just reality. And so what I look at is there's a college, like a summer league team, kind of like the Cape League. Mm-hmm. There's a league there, and there's a team called the Savannah Bananas. They have truly turned this.
No.
Just listen to me. They've truly turned it into a business for the fans. And to spice it up and make it more fun, you can have two guys in the batter's box at the same time. If you throw a wild pitch, the guy can take off and run. If you walk him, you have to throw it around the infield, and then you can try and tag him out. He can keep going until you do that at, you know, no risk. And my favorite, this is the one that they should at least bring to, I guess they can't, thinking out loud because of the nets, but if you pop it into the stands in the Savannah Bananas game and a fan catches it, you're out. So some of these little sprinkles, I think they can find some, almost like the ABA to the NBA, and bring them into this exhibition contest that is the All-Star Game.
Why doesn't Major League Baseball do something like that?
Have some fun with it and bring more fans into it, especially on social media.
Of course. Like, imagine having Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Juan Soto standing in the batter's box at the same time.
Your sport is fun.
Well, now it's fun. Now it's like, oh, I got to see this. Who's going to throw the wild pitch? Oh, imagine it's Luis Castillo on the mound. Or Sandy Alcantara of the Miami Marlins.
Now you're going to be something different, something electric. How is this possibly going to work out? Two guys at the box. So just have some fun with it. It's an exhibition contest that is dying on the vine. So mm-hmm. lean into it. Find these different ways, like the Savannah Bananas, peanut butter on the roof of the mouth, to spice it up. But stick with us here on the Diehards on Sports Map Radio Network. I'm going to clear out the palate. We're going to talk NFL win totals. That's coming up next on the Sports Map Radio Network.
This is the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and Basketball Insider's Bobby Krivitsky.
You're listening to the Diehards here on the Sports Map Radio Network. Bobby Krivitsky and Shukri writes, Jew, we dabbled a little bit in NFL over-under win totals with Connor Mackey. He had some great insight looking in particular at who he thinks might lift the Lombardi, and that is a team we're going to get to here in this segment, as well as some teams who he looks at those 9.5 over-under totals, some really juicy names in there. We're going to get to some of them in this segment as well. Why don't we start in what clearly is the most competitive division in the NFL entering next season? The AFC West absolutely loaded up across the board. Every team seemed to have gotten better.
Oh, no question. And then you look at the Denver Broncos as the team that everybody is going to keep having their eyes on in that division in terms of, are they going to be a playoff team? And they could they be a potential dark horse team, especially with the addition of Russell Wilson? I think that in itself is going to turn what I thought was a very underrated Denver team that just didn't have a quarterback last year into a very dangerous team going into 2022.
Yeah, I feel like if you asked the sports handicappers, they would tell you the reason for the figure I'm about to give you is more than Russell Wilson. It's that really good young defense with the likes of Justin Simmons, for example, mm-hmm. and all the young pieces that Wilson's now inheriting on that Denver offense. But at the same time, the figure here on FanDuel, and that's where all these over-under win totals are going to be coming from, 10.5 at plus 135. I'm taking the under on that one. I don't see the Denver Broncos clicking so well and staying healthy to the point they get 11 wins or more this season. I'll pass on that.
I think it will be less than 10.5 because they're playing in murderous row. That is the AFC West. I don't see them rampaging through the division against the likes of the Chargers, Raiders, and we didn't even talk about Patrick Mahomes. Like, I just don't see it. And that's six games against those three teams alone. Like, I just have a very difficult time being convinced that even with the addition of Russell Wilson, that they're going to win, let's say, for argument's sake, 11 games on this year's schedule. That's hard. But next week when we start looking ahead to training camp outlooks across the NFL, the Denver Broncos are going to be talked about as, what exactly do you make of this team? Because right now, hot take, this team reminds me of the 2012 Seattle Seahawks. Mark my words. The only difference is the age of Russell Wilson, because think about it at the time. What does Russell Wilson do in 2012? He comes in, he obviously wins the starting job over Matt Flynn, but that was a young Legion of Boom team at that time. Earl Thomas and Cam Chancellor, Bobby Wagner, Richard Sherman. Very young. Look at Denver's defense now. You talk about Justin Simmons, and you talk about that linebacking core. But don't forget, their D-line in itself.
Bradley Chubb.
Very, very, very underrated. And I'm one of the things that this year, the nation is going to know more about Bradley Chubb and just how good of a pass rusher he is. So I see some similarities between 2012 Seattle and 2022's Denver team, but it's all going to come down to how Russell Wilson performs.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. I love the comparison. You're swaying me towards maybe I should be taking that over, but still.
Just, I'm not willing to go there.
Yeah, exactly.
Because of the division. That's the reason why.
I think too much has to break right, and then you factor in the most difficult division in football. So I know they now have an extra game, that 17th one on the calendar, to get to this figure. But at the same time, again, there's so many young pieces on both sides of the ball. Then you factor in it's the sport with the highest rate of injury, toughest division, all of that. So ultimately, I would say it's going to clock in by the end of the season at less than 10.5 wins, less than 11 for the Denver Broncos. Let's keep it in the toughest division in football. And let's go to a team that they didn't load up at quarterback, but they got arguably, some people believe, the number one wide receiver in the game in Devontae Adams. That's the Las Vegas Raiders. A little bit lower on them in the eyes of FanDuel. They clock them at over under 8 wins on the dot, and they have it at minus 155. So basically telling you that they lean towards, you know, that basically they're willing to concede that if you take this, you can get good value on it if you believe they'll hit the over.
Ooh. I'm going to go over, and the reason is because you talked about Devontae Adams. He instantly makes that Raiders offense better. If you can get Josh McDaniels and Derek Carr to work in as a cohesive unit and to be able to work magic offensively, that offense can make noise. But ultimately, defensively is where I'm a little concerned. The secondary is not terrible, but I do think early on last season, the secondary cost you a couple of games. But I do expect Max Crosby to be even more of a force defensively for this Raiders defense if they are going to make noise in the AFC West. Because I think if you're going to ask me right now who is the most important and most impactful player on the Raiders right now, Crosby is that guy, no question in my mind, I think in my opinion.
Yeah, he's a monster, and if he keeps getting better, then right now I would not describe him as someone who has the ability or who does consistently wreck the game like a Von Miller type or an Aaron Donald.
He's getting there.
He could get there. He could take that next step. This, you know, that's what it is for him to become. So right now I look at him and say, this guy's an absolute beast. You need to game plan for him. You need to know where he is at all times. But as far as consistently seeing those highlights of Crosby being the one who came off the edge, strip sack, game over, that's the next step for him to start doing that more than once or twice in a season, which is really hard to do. But we're talking about the greats in the league, you know, especially Von Miller in his prime, yeah. Aaron Donald forever because the man's a freak of nature. Mm-hmm. So if they get that next step from Crosby, he's got Chandler Jones across from him now. It's a really, you know, again, a way if you're going to neutralize a mediocre secondary, a great pass rush. And if those two give him that, whew, look out for the Raiders. So I could see them getting – it's not in the best interest of the AFC West putting in three playoff teams, but I definitely could see the Raiders eclipsing that eight-figure win total. So we'll see what happens with them. And then you brought up Patrick Mahomes. This is a team that is hoping their step forward – comes in the form of being a more cohesive unit. They lose Tyreek Hill, maybe the greatest chess piece to have in football, and instead it's going to be Valdes-Scantling and Juju Smith-Schuster. And it's this idea that sprinkling his money around instead of putting it all on Tyreek Hill is going to make this team a little bit more dynamic and a little bit better, even though they lose that big piece of theirs. So FanDuel looks at it and says, over 10.5, you got to put up -115 to make that happen. Do you see Kansas City? It's the same question as Denver. Can they get to 11 wins without Tyreek Hill?
I think they can. And I think it's going to be more of a team, like effort this year than it was last season. Not saying last season, it wasn't a team effort, but let's be honest. You had video game numbers with Mahomes and Tyreek Hill. I mean, if it wasn't for their epic collapse against the Cincinnati Bengals in the AFC Championship game, we'd be talking about this is a team that's coming off, what, three straight Super Bowl appearances? So I know that the loss of Tyreek Hill is going to sting. But as you were talking about receivers, my focus was on the offensive line. Because their offensive line last year, holy smokes, it really was a problem at times where you could see that they really miss guys like Lavarne Tardif. And it was like, man, the offensive line that was a force in 2019 and in 2020, you didn't see that last year at times. And I think this offseason, or should I say this past offseason, the Kansas City Chiefs really intentionally focused on trying to rebuild that offensive line to protect Mahomes. As long as he's got that protection and that blocking up front, Mahomes magic, easy.
They've got one of the best young centers in football in that line with Creed Humphrey. Yeah. They brought in Joe Tooney two off seasons ago. So there are some pieces. I'm more concerned about them on the bookends than in the interior of that front five. But nonetheless, it's Patrick Mahomes. It's the best quarterback in football. And still, I'm punting on this figure. I'm just by a little bit. But nonetheless, I look at their defense. Can't stop a nosebleed in the red zone. They're suspect in the secondary. They lose Tyrann Mathieu, who was a leader for that team. So
that's a huge
we'll see
one.
What happens
yeah.
with Justin Reed, if that was a smart move or not. So there are just too many concerns for the Chiefs. Even if it goes well, I'm going to say 10 wins or less. Stick with us here on the Diehards. We've got NHL Talk with Shue coming up next.
Ah!
This is the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and basketball insiders Bobby Krivitsky.
You're listening to the Diehards here on the Sports
What a great Map. Song selection. I'm sorry, I had to cut in.
Give it
like,
to
you
me.
Just brought back memories of 2001 with that song, like,
Nelly
I mean.
And Farm?
Yes, are you kidding me?
That just
got me fired up. Like, let's go.
And
shout out to the producer. I'm sorry, Bobby. Go ahead.
Shout out to Austin, absolute legend, crushing it all night with the rejoins. This one has Shoe fired up, so I really love to see it in particular. And I was nodding my head a little bit, too, as it was playing. Shoe, you cover the NHL. How can we not talk about it at the onset of free agency here? A lot going down already. What's caught your attention?
The stunning news that Johnny Gaudreau is going, or I should say, is now with the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Are you more surprised that he left Calgary or that he didn't sign with a team closer to his home in the Northeast?
I think I'm surprised that he left Calgary, but I could kind of see why. Because, one, you know, Sid Cicciero of the Breakfast Club in Toronto, he said something interesting. And I thought about it, and I said, you know what, he's right. Johnny Gaudreau is among now a list of American players who have played in Canada in the Canadian market where the expectation and demand is to win the Stanley Cup only to leave and go play elsewhere in the prime of their careers. And Johnny Gaudreau, listen, I get that he's going to be having a kid soon, you know, starting a new family and so forth. That's understandable. But I was surprised because, one, as I mentioned, maybe the pressure. I mean, he'd been playing there for, 8 years? So he was already used to that market. So that, for me, was the most surprising part. But the other part of it was, number two, is Calgary did everything they could. And that, for me, tore me apart where it was like, and I hate to get mushy here, but they rolled out the red carpet. They really did. If you read like, the columns from like, the hockey writers that cover the NHL, they rolled out the red carpet and said, hey, we want you to stay. You are an integral piece of our franchise. Stay. But in the end, he decided to go elsewhere. But I was really one of those who believed that if he was going to go elsewhere, Jersey, the Devils, because he's a Jersey boy, Philly, because he grew up in the Philly metro area in South Jersey. But Columbus. When the news broke that Columbus was the team that were going to sign him to a 7-year, $9.5 million annual average value, I'm like, why Columbus? Every NHL fan had to have been thinking, why Columbus? I'm not saying Columbus is a bad hockey market, but they're not Philadelphia. They're not New York. They're sure as hell not Boston.
Where he was a star in college.
Right. He went to BC here. Like, why Columbus, and even right now, I still have a very difficult time wrapping my mind around that.
I think that's where the hockey world is at collectively. And by the way, the contract isn't some blow-you-away offer. It's 7 years, $68.25 million. So he probably could have got more if he stayed in Calgary. But to me, he is the NHL's Donovan Mitchell, where you look at a guy and you just say,
I love that.
Appreciate it. Every now and then I get one right.
Yeah.
You look at it and you just say, you're not destined to be in this market beyond however long you have to be. And 8 years is a long time. He put it in. He reached free agency. It's his right to do whatever he wants. But I do think that he looked at Calgary the whole time that he was there and said, I like it. It's probably better than he anticipated when he got drafted. But I don't love it. And at some point, I'm going to leave it. And that's exactly what happened. So I'm not surprised that he left Calgary, even though, like you said, it's a team that with him there especially – capable of contending for a cup in a really good situation, but the location, the destination, it's not like Columbus was a Johnny Gaudreau away from being a contender in their own right. The money, the offer, doesn't blow you away. So this, to me, is just an absolutely shocking development that he wanted out that badly, and credit to the Blue Jackets organization, they were able to persuade him to come.
And I think that in itself was definitely opened up a lot of eyes around the NHL, like Columbus, will that now mean more free agents are going to want to go play in Columbus? And that's something I think is going to be worth to keep an eye out on, whether if it's this offseason or next offseason. because Johnny picked Columbus. That in itself is what is going to be the big sticking point. He picked them. Apparently, there were teams that were, including New Jersey, who were ready to offer him north of $10 million per season. But he picked Columbus. Now, if we were to look across the NHL in terms of equally surprising moves or signings or trades that took place yesterday, outside of Johnny Cajole going to Columbus, I think for me the biggest surprise easily has got to be the moves that the Detroit Red Wings made, bringing in the likes of Andrew Kopp, bringing in guys like David Perron, formerly of the St. Louis Blues. And I was talking about this yesterday with a really good friend of mine on a separate interview, that Detroit and also Ottawa, who got Claude Giroux, are the two teams I look at and say, uh-oh, they're getting better. While the Boston Bruins are literally spinning in neutral, and that is a very scary place to be if you're a Bruins fan.
Yeah, the Red Wings, I love the additions, and they complement an emerging young core. So you talk about, you know, one of the guys they brought in is Ben Chiarot. So he's
another
gonna,
one, thank you. Yeah.
He's going to pair up now with Calder Trophy winner Moritz Seider. So this is just a really impressive development. And Steve Yzerman, we saw what he did with the Lightning. Mm-hmm. Now he's over in Detroit where he was a star player and one of the best executives in the game. So it's really interesting to see him quickly turned around. Detroit was kind of floundering before he came home, if you will. So they're off to a great start this offseason. I like what they have going on around Dylan Larkin and company. And then another team that I look at, the defending Stanley Cup champions, and I'm curious to get your take on this because Joe Sakic clearly said, I can keep who I want here. It's just a question of prioritizing. So they let their goalie, Darcy Kemper, go, but they keep Niskanen, Lehkonen, they keep Manson, Darren Helm is back. So I'm curious how you look at their moves, who they lost, which presumably will include Nazem Kadri, who they retained, and what you make of their offseason so far.
I actually do not have a problem with what they've done so far. They actually upgraded at goaltender. They go out and they get Alexander Georgiev, who was the backup. He was the backup to Shesterkin with the Rangers as well. They got better in net because I've always looked at Darcy Kemper as, yes, he's a Stanley Cup winning goalie, starting goalie in the NHL. No way it's going to ever take that away. But if you told me that you can upgrade and bring in Alexander Georgiev, or you keep Kemper, who are you picking? Georgiev. Because I'm going based upon what I saw what he was able to do with the Rangers, that he's a legitimate number two. Now having an opportunity to be the number one goalie for the defending Stanley Cup champions, that's an upgrade. But I do wonder, the big question left for Colorado is going to be, what happens with Nazem Kadri? I don't think him coming back is a foregone conclusion, and I also don't think him being gone is also a foregone conclusion. Because teams that have money is now dwindling. That list is now getting shorter by the day. So you wonder, if you're Nazem Kadri, how many options do you realistically have left prior to 12 noon yesterday? Because now as we head to the weekend, the first weekend of free agency, you wonder, does Nazem Kadri have that many options left? And does he return to Colorado as a result based on what they offer and as well as best opportunity to continue to win?
Sure, you cover the NHL. The NFL free agency, for instance, it comes in waves where it's fast and furious in the beginning, then it dies down, then it mm-hmm. picks up again. So what do you anticipate? Just how busy do you believe this weekend will be in terms of transactions?
I think it's going to pick up because all of the top tier number one free agents have been signed for, by and large, with the exception of Kadri. But now the second tier, the guys that you can say, hey, you know what? I want to sign you for four years, $4.5 million, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now those type of guys are going to get signed for. But I look at a team like Carolina, who traded for Brent Burns, formerly of the San Jose Sharks, yesterday, which I thought that was a very interesting move.
They got him at a great price.
Like, they got him at a great price at that. And I'm like, wow, okay. You talk about buffing up that blue line. There it is. Although they did lose Vincent Trocheck to the New York Rangers for the 7-year contract he signed with the Rangers. But, man, you're thinking, well, who are the next best free agents that are out there? Why not take a hard look at a Joe Thornton, who I think is still going to make a decision in terms of whether he's going to come back for another year or not. We'll see. And as well as guys that may not have gotten their contracts in their early stages, but I do think this weekend is where, like, the second tier of free agents definitely get signed.
Yeah, and to this point for Carolina, it's been all about the trades. They ship out Tony DeAngelo.
Yeah.
They bring in Burns, as you said. And also, they got Max Pacioretty basically for free because Vegas is in a cap crunch thanks to the Eichel trade. So I love what Carolina putting around really good veterans that can still produce to help this young core, who clearly they showed their youth in the playoffs where they couldn't win on the road. And ultimately, it cost them. And then in Game 7 at home against New York, they imploded. So now they go through this. They're more experienced as a result of it. And they add players who know how to win, who have been experienced, and can help them next go around.
And that's something that I think that for Carolina, as an example, they looked at their 7-game loss to the New York Rangers as a lesson in regards to what you can't have happen in the playoffs. You need guys that have shown that they can win in the postseason. Max Pacioretty, he's got into a conference final with Montreal. Brett Burns, he got to a cup final with San Jose in 2016. Like, guys that know what it takes to win on the road in the playoffs, and those guys have done that. And that's part of the reason why I think Carolina, they're going to be back at it next season. They're going to be contenders, no question in my mind. But also, can we talk about Ottawa for a second? Because Ottawa, you talk about, they got Claude Giroux, who is still a very, very productive offensive player. And then you also combine that with their captain, Tkachuk, Brady Tkachuk, that is, and as well as Tim Stutzel, the German, and then as well as they traded for Alex DeBrincat as well.
Yeah, that was a great move.
That was a great move. I don't want they may got something there. They might have something there. And I get that they traded away their goalie Matt Murray to Toronto.
I thought that was a win for them.
Was a win for the Ottawa Senators. So they're coming up.
Oh, absolutely! It's really exciting. Do you think that Ottawa can realistically vie for the playoffs next year? Are they that good?
They're close, but I'm not ready to go there yet. They're close. Like, I'll say another year away, but it looks like they may be ready to make that move. But if you look at the East, I still think it's going to be the same team that make the playoffs again, with the exception of the Bruins. I think the first
Bruins
month and a half,
all the way out.
Honestly, I think the first month and a half is going to do them in. I really do. Because between Marchand missing the first 3 months of the season at minimum, Charlie McAvoy missing time to start the season, and Grizzlick as well, and there's no guarantees on Bergeron and Krejci at the time of this show, you don't know if they are going to come back or not. This could be a very rough beginning for the Bruins to start the new season.
We got about 20 seconds here. What are your thoughts on the Pavel Zacha acquisition?
I don't hate it. I like the fact that he added size. What I also like is the fact that Zacha is someone, I think, with the right coach in Jim Montgomery, who I think he's going to finally buy in and play motivated. Because one thing I did worry about, it was him, like, zoning out towards the end of the season. But I think new change of scenery will do him wonders.
I love it. And they sold high on Eric Halla, who had a great season but kind of an outlier for him. To bring in a young player of comparable production, that's good business in my estimation. Stick with us here on the Diehards. We're going to put a bow on tonight's program. That's coming up next on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and basketball insiders Bobby Krivitsky.
Austin, you are absolutely killing it with the rejoins, hit after hit after hit. Closing time indeed here on the Diehards on Sports Map Radio Network. Shu, we talked about all the different fascinating components and the reason to watch the MLB All-Star Home Run Derby. But now we save the best for last. Pick a winner. You look at this 8-person bracket. Who do you think emerges with the crown?
I am going to go with Juan Soto. I think
he hate you right now.
I really am, because I mean the power that kid absolutely possesses is just astounding, and I think in spacious Dodger Stadium, it's going to favor left-handed hitters more than right than left-handed. It's going to favor left-handers more than right-handers, rather.
Shu, I didn't know who you would pick, but I thought that I would be the one with the, oh, you know what? I didn't think about that. I like that prediction. It's Juan Soto.
I think it is going to be Soto, yeah.
I'm 100% with you, and you made the case. I'm on the Juan Soto train as well. Maybe it's more popular than I anticipated when it came to mind, but I size it up. I'd love Pujols to win. Who wouldn't? Mm-hmm. I don't see Pete Alonso going 3-for-3.
Nah.
I don't think it's J-Rod's time at the Derby. Juan Soto, a guy who Connor Mack, Pub Sports Radio, brought up the idea that he's looking to cash in. This is one of those things that gets you the type of attention that matters, maybe not to GMs, but to owners. It makes you that much more recognizable and popular of a figure. It means that fans know your name and know more about you. So I think Juan Soto gets this award, and it helps him just a little bit in free agency. For Austin, for Shukri, I'm Bobby Krivitsky. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Diehards. Have a great night, and enjoy the rest of your week.